Accession number 30398, Mr. Nathan Ritz, Reel 5. Now, we're talking about your signals training, and you talked about the telephone exchange. What's going on to say about the radio?
Well, then they started teaching you about the radio. We had another radio which fitted on your back.
Now,
was a field radio.
You know what number it was? 88?
18 or... 18. It was either an 18 or a 22. I get them mixed up. I don't know if the big one was a 22 or the little one was a 22 and the big one was an 18. I think the big one was an 18 and the little one was a 22. The little one was about this big.
About 1 foot.
And it had an aerial that stuck out the back. And plus it had earphones for you and the officer, because you everywhere the officer went, you had to follow him. If he went in the toilet, this is not joking, you had to go in there with him. And you couldn't leave his side because he's got to be in contact with his HQ at all times, especially in the field. So, this is 6 weeks. Anyway, the 6 week course.
Now, hang on, did you have to learn Morse at
all?
Now, tell me about that, because that's not easy.
No, it's bloody hard.
How did you learn it?
This is how it goes. You do this with your finger. Da 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 da. Oh, you wake up thinking, oh, the bloody thing's running through my bleeding head. But even then, they said, don't worry about them all so much because it's obsolete. It's virtually obsolete. In a few years, it's going to be completely obsolete.
Now, what about voice procedures? Things like phonetic alphabet.
We had to learn the phonetic alphabet. Well, it's different now. The phonetic alphabet has changed completely now because it was Abel, Baker, Charlie, Dog, and that's how it went on. But we learnt the phonetic alphabet. We also used to learn code. Sunray was the colonel, and all different, each one had a different code. So you had to learn the code of which each one. Roger, Wilco, you had to do all this that you knew which was the difference between Roger and Wilco. Roger... You over Wilco, I will, carry out the orders or something, and I will, boom. It was all different. A lot of it I've forgotten.
So there was a set way of doing everything.
Oh, you had to do is everything was set. The army, you have to learn everything in its way, and they spent. Then you had to learn how to repair telephone lines.
Now tell me about that.
You learn how to repair telephone lines, but they say right. There's a lot of it, you have to go out at night. There's no lights out there, is there, at night? So they blindfolded you, and you had to do it blindfolded. And I've got so good with it, I could, that's like how people are blind, I suppose they learn. We were, you learn, because there's five wires. There's four normal wires, and one is that you can wrap round, which is, very, and that's how you do it, and then you put a bind round it so it doesn't hit anything. You got a telephone, you have to find out where you get, there's trouble on it, there's something wrong on the line, so you have to follow it all through and find out what the trouble is and put it right. And they go along putting different things, and you have to go each one and find out why the telephone is not working. You have to go out and say, right, this is scratch. You've got to set up the main telephone, and you've got to set out, there's Abel Baker, Charlie Dog, blah, blah, blah. You've got to set all these lines out, and you've got to make sure they all work. And I was good at that. I used to do all that.
This is a big course. Anything else you had to learn? I mean, that's a lot already, but anything else?
Batteries. We had to learn how to do batteries.
By doing batteries?
Well, the batteries were this big. They're all in wooden.
That's nearly 3 foot.
And they weighed like blobbing hell, And you had to put them in series so when you charge them, you charge the whole lot at once. So... negative, positive, negative, positive, all the way along. You could charge about 20, 30 of them, all doing this. And then you had a little two-stroke motor. If it broke down, I learned how to strip it right down and put it back together. I'm just amazed myself. Because when I told him, he couldn't believe that I could do all this. I've never done anything like this in my life. And I thought, I could have been a bloody electrician. The two-stroke engine was as easy as anything. I mean, there was not very many moving parts. You only had the cylinder, take it all off, strip it all down, decoat it, pull it all back again. They had one little sparking plug. You clean the sparking plug or changed it, or the wire broke, you had to repair it. All this, you had to know every little... You asked Ron Batchelor, he was a signaler. He never learnt all that. He'll tell you.
Now, anything else? I mean, as you say, it's a lot, but
It was a we were trained like, as I said, it was because when I spoke to Ron, he said, "Oh, you're a linesman." I said, "You're joking. I was a wireless operator, linesman," and he couldn't believe it that I'd learnt all this, you know, because he only learnt one particular thing when you're in the signals. You're either a radio wireless operator or you're a linesman.
They're specialists.
They're specialists. I had to be specialist. Probably, did you? You said you spoke to Ginger Nuttall. Did he tell you the same thing?
He did tell that kind of thing, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. So I'm not lying, am I?
No, of course not. Now, anything else about... That was a 6 week course. That would be from, what, December through to February?
No, yes, that's right. No, I wasn't that long on it. And then they put me on the... then they just left me there.
At Hero?
They just left me at Hero. I just thought...
Now, what was the Hero camp like?
It had very, very long huts. Extremely long, because there were ex-prisoner of war huts that the British and all that were kept in. But we were, there was Americans one end, there was Canadians, Australians and the British. And that's when I met, what's his name, the one who won the VC, Bill Speakman.
Now tell me about him, because he's quite a well-known character. Yeah. He's also quite difficult.
Yeah, he's a very funny guy, Bill Speakman, because you know how he won the VC, don't you?
Well,
he was drunk. Completely drunk, and he was out of his mind. And when the Chinese attacked, he just got hold of bottles and hit them over the head with the bottles, and they ran for their life. Because he was 6'5". He was, I don't know how tall you are. Are you about the same?
6'4".
He's 6'5". You can imagine a big bloke like that looking down on these two, the tiny Chinese. Whoa, man, you know. Anyway.
Now, what was he like when you met him?
Well, this is the story. He was very quiet. He laid on his bed. And all you could see is a big pair of boot sticks, because he was so tall, he couldn't fit into the bed. There weren't men for men of his height. He was waiting to go, I don't know. The next thing I heard, he'd gone back to England to get his visa, and then he came back out again, because he was made sergeant, he was a private then.
Was he difficult? I mean, his reputation is that he drank a lot.
He did.
May be unfair.
No, that's true, he did drink a hell of a lot. And he told me the story, he said to me, his colonel called him in and he said, "Bill, I've got two options. I can either give you the VC or I can bloody well send you to the Bleaton Guardhouse and you'll start." He said, "I've decided to give you the VC." And that's exactly how he told me the story. This is the gospel way he told it. And but he very quiet. You couldn't get much out of him. He wasn't interested in any of us at all.
He didn't drink with you then?
No, he was a very funny guy. I wasn't there long before he'd gone. You know, he was away. So I thought, oh, at least I met him. And, one night, I remember this bloody Australian. He drunk as a bike. Big, also about taller than you he was. Big fella. Not tall as Speakman, but quite tall. He said, "My name's McConkey and I'll fight anybody." And he said, "I hate those bloody limeys." And all these bloody British soldiers were shivering. We had one bloke who'd won the MM 3 times, Corporal Smith. He came, so he was I thought, right, I'm not having this. So it was like the OK Corral. I met him in the middle like that. And you can imagine, I'm tiny and he's up there. And he said, he put his arm around me. "That's all right, copper, I'll buy you a drink." I called his bluff. And all the others were frightened of him. I thought, what are you, bloody ninnies or something, you know? Mind you, if I'd have thought about it, I probably could have squashed me into the ground. But I thought, I'm not letting this. And they were saying, well done, Smith. Yeah, oh, he said, "I wish I..." I thought, there's a bloke who's been awarded 3 times MM for being brave, and he can't face one bloke. So anyway, then we had a bloke, I think it was a captain, came over and he said, "Oh, you're in the Norfolk," he said, we're short of men over there now. Me and a few others, we went on the short journey from Currie to Currie.
Were you at Currie?
Yeah, came back from here. I went to Currie.
Now, when did you go to Currie then? When was that?
February 19.
February sounds right. 52.
We got to.
Do you remember anything about the crossing?
Yeah, well, not so much the crossing as when we got there. We got to one of these old boats that we went over. We got to, because it was going on to England after it. Like, it was the same, like when we came, it was a reverse. It was going back again. They were taking troops back, and we got off at Pusan. And I thought, oh, here we go. And we got into Pusan, and when you get into Pusan, I've got it in a picture of it. There's a train. There was a train that took us up to the front line. And this big black American soldier, he drove the train. And the band used to play, you know, one of these American marches, they used to say. And then we got on the train, and it took us up to as far as it could go. And then from then, lorries took us up to the... We weren't actually in the front line when I got there. They were in reserve when I got to...
Were they still in the Samichon area? Or had they
were in the Samichon Valley, yeah. They were in the Samichon Valley, but they weren't up on the front line. They'd been up the front because they used to do so many months at the front line and come back for 6 weeks and held them. They were held in reserve. Then they'd go back in again. Then the others would go back in reserve. So when I got there, we were...
I thought they went into the Peacock Hills in April in reserve.
Well, I got there in February. They were...
Right,
they were,
no, that's fine.
Unless they were... Well, I'm sure they were in reserve. Maybe they were in the front line. Oh, that's right. The king died, didn't he? Around about February 1952. That's right. I'm wrong. We went right into the front line. Because I remember when I got there, somebody shouted out, "You! You effing, you know, what are you doing?" So, "Nothing, Sergeant." He said, "Get up there, you're on the bloody skyline there, bloody will kill you." And of course, this is the first time it came home to me, I'm in the bloody front line, because you don't realise. And I thought, oh my God, I better get out. And so, yeah, I was, you're right, I was in the bloody front line. I thought we were out. No, you're right. Well,
go out for about 6 weeks in April, but I mean, there's about. It sounds to me like for about a month you were in the front line.
Yeah, I must have been in the front
line. And it was the Samichon.
The Samichon Valley.
I'm only.
It was on the hill near Hill 355.
No, that's later. That's at Koang San.
Yeah, but we were in the Samichon Valley.
Yeah, so Koang San's further up.
Yeah, and then I remember we were headed for.
That's after the.
Yeah, see, you get mixed up which way, which when catch come first. You always think. Yeah, well, I was in the front line. I remember now. Yeah,
now
because
what,
we got
which company and platoon were you put in?
I was in HQ company
as a signaller.
Yeah.
So were you signal platoon?
Yeah.
And who was running it? Who made you?
Emsden, Captain Emsden.
Now, what did you think of him? What was he like?
Funny guy.
In what way?
Him and Fleming. They were both officers. Well, we found out later, not being disrespectful, but they were both puffs. They used to walk along hand in hand, because in those days you couldn't say anything about officers.
I mean, they're both captains.
No, one was a captain, one was a second lieutenant. It couldn't be two captains. One
of course
had to
were.
Be.
They were in the platoon.
Yeah. One was in charge, and one. But later on, Emsden was. Well, I'll tell you later what happened to Emsden.
Now, what did you think of them as officers? Obviously,
well,
not much.
I didn't think much. Of both of them, actually.
Why not?
Emsden was an egotistic who thought he was it, you know, and Fleming was jealous of Emsden because he thought he should be, because he went to a private school and university, and Emsden went to an ordinary grammar school, and he thought he was, had it over him, you know what I mean? He was private school, and that is definitely better than the grammar school, boy. You know, this is the same old thing that goes on.
Now, what about your platoon sergeant? Who is
that? Oh, yeah, Sergeant Roach. Yeah, I like
Roach.
Roach.
Yeah. R-O-A? Or
like the fish.
And what was he like?
Oh, he was a smashing guy. He really was. He virtually got my promotion for me.
Now, what was he like as a bloke?
He was a very nice bloke, an easygoing bloke. But when he had to be tough, he was tough. But he was a sort of bloke that you could go to and speak to with any problems, and he would try and sort them out for you. He wasn't a, get out of here, I'm the sergeant and you. He definitely got Emsden to promote me.
And what about, who else? Sergeant, any other NCOs? Corporal?
Yeah, I can't remember their names.
any mates? You
oh, know? Yeah, Carter was a Lance Corporal. He was a mate of mine.
What was he like?
Oh, a real sweet. A real Norfolk sweet, he was. All right, me boy. Oh, dear. How he got on the radio and people understood him, I don't really know. There was him, I knew Nuttall because he was in A or B company, I can't remember which, but he was one of those companies. Who was the other? Wait a minute, who was another corporal? I think Austin, yeah, Austin, Alan Austin, he was a corporal. But he wasn't made up till later. I'm trying to think. Oh, there was one corporal, I can't remember his name, he was a right idiot. He knew absolutely nothing. I had to teach him how to use a radio. He came to me one day, he said, Nat, can you teach me how to use this? I said, I beg your pardon. He was. He said, I don't know how to use it. I said, but didn't you go? He said, I didn't listen to anything on the course. I wasn't bothered. And I thought, here he's made up to a full corporal, and I've got to teach him what to do. And I thought, oh, it's not what you know, it's who you know. He was always round Emsden. Always. He was his boy, you know.
Now, how was the signal platoon set up? What was it? I mean, did you have a signal dugout or, you know?
Yes.
What would it be like? Can you describe it so that we can almost picture it? I know it's
well. We dug this. Oh, it was the main thing. It was a massive, great thing. We sunk it into the ground. It must have because it actually saved my life. I will tell you, it saved my
this
life.
This is Sammy Chong.
This is when we were up in. When we were pulled back, but up there, our CP was a very.
Well, tell us about that one first.
Well, the CP was where we used to have our.
So the command post, the signals thing was
CP, where, right? Yeah. It had all the radio equipment, some of the radio equipment, and all the telephone equipment in it.
What did it look like? So what was it? What was in there? And this is the first
It was
one.
Dug into the ground, and it had a roof which we put on, and a door which we fitted to it, if you call it a door, and that was it. It had didn't have any windows or anything. That was it. You sat when you were on duty.
What was the roof?
Oh God, the roof was made out of logs and earth. We used to find logs, put them on, and earth over the top, and we used to try and make it as thick as we could because if it was hit. You had no chance, but I'll tell you later. No,
that's saved, the other one, though.
Yeah, that saved my life.
Now, so that's now. What were you, what were the duties that you know? You settle in. I mean,
My duties was we spent some time on the radio with other, you know, contacting like A, B, and C.
So tell us.
Lots of times he used to give me messages because a lot of messages you couldn't send over the radio because.
Well, do the wireless first. So what was it like being on wireless duty?
Well, on wireless, 2 hours on, and, you know, you could do 2 hours on, and you were off, then 2 hours on, because it was always you're listening, especially at night. And we used to get a load of interference from the Chinese. Actually speaking to us in English. We had used to get a woman on there. We used to call her Peking Rose. You know, in the war, it was Tokyo Rose. She was Peking Rose. And this is how she used to speak to you. Tommy, what you do over here, Tommy? I know you were Norfolk regiments. What you do over here, Tommy? We, it's not your fight. We and Chinese and the British, we are friends. We are not enemies. Why do you stay there? When you are at home, the Americans, they are, you know, doing to your mother and to your wives, and you are out here. Well, I used to bloody try and jam her, and she used to go gabbling on and on and on. And then we get interference from the Chinese trying to copy what we were saying. We used to jam. It was like, and some nights we'd put on the big fight from America because we'd gotten so bored. I remember when what's the name?
Now, I'll come to that. I will come to it. Now,
we'll
so what exactly are you real, Jitcher? So you're trying to do stuff while you've got these Chinese gabbling.
Then
what are you actually doing now? What is?
Well,
what
we
is
were listening. Well, we were. Sending messages to each other, messages would come in, tack on so and so and so and so. It's the usual war banter which goes backwards and forwards. What's happening on the front line? So and so's in trouble, blah, blah, blah. Patrols out, not return, blah, blah, blah. Got to try and find and try to bring them back. It's all, think they've been captured and blah, certain men were captured. And it was, you get the colonel, you'd have to get in touch with somebody would get in touch with the colonel, and blah, blah. Or we get in touch, we used to speak a lot to the Americans, because we were all in contact with each other. The Americans, the Canadians, the Australians, we were all talking to each other, because you have to, because you're all into one, we'd be here, the Americans would be here, the South Koreans would be here, the Australians would be here. They're all in one line, all in different sections, you know. And that's how you kept in contact with each other.
Now, when you got a message, what did you do? Do you write it down?
You have to write it down. You know, write it as quickly.
And then how did you pass it to the officer?
Then you...
Where were they in the command post?
Oh, they were sometimes in the command post, or they would be their own place, so you couldn't do it. You'd send the other bloke who was with you. He'd run over and give the officer the message, and he would then write, so-and-so, get on to Blom. He'd get on... He'd come right over to the CP, get onto the thing, and he'd get onto whoever he wanted to get on. But Emsden was only the signal bloke, so really and truly, that's all we had to deal with, make sure that our radios and everything were in contact and everybody knew where we were and, you know, make sure none of their communications ever went out. Because if they went, I mean, sometimes he used to say to me, right, you're on line patrol.
Yeah, hang on, no, we've got some other things. We'll come to... When you were on the wireless, that was a lot of the work. They did a lot of communication by wireless.
Yeah, and then a lot of it was done with the radio, telephone.
Now, did you have telephone duties as well?
Yeah, I did. I used to be on the telephone exchange for 2 hours on, 4 hours off, two at the same thing, and take it in rotation, you see.
And that was just the same as you've already described, answering the...
Yeah, answering the telephone. You get all these multiple calls, and you have to keep... I mean, when the plumbing thing went up, you know, it was like bedlam. I can't cope with this much longer, because it was, everybody was on such tender hooks, you know. And then if they didn't want to send the message over the phone all the way though, they used to say, like, not to me exactly, but I would be on there, say, right, these are the messages I want you to take to Seoul. And then I'd have a driver that would drive me to Seoul. And I would go to Seoul with these messages, because they didn't want to go. They were so secret that they had to be sent by hand. And I must tell you this story that I met this guy later on in Korea. It's just funny, the bloke who used to drive me. Anyway, we were driving along, and I did, oh yes, right, Emerson said to me, I'm giving you my Jeep. So I thought, oh, that's right. He said, you should be honoured. He said, you got my Jeep. And unbeknown to me, he left his jacket on the seat. And of course, it had three peeps on the jacket. So we get to the checkpoint, and this sergeant was in the, the army police. And he starts saluting me. And my friend, he's going, he's trying to do it. And I look back and I see this bloke. So I thought, he said, salute him back. And because he was a right comical sort, so I saluted him back. And I see his button was on. And, Sergeant! I said, what's that, sir? I said, do your button up, you're not. And if you ever found out it was me, and we drove off. And we were in hysterics. I mean, you can imagine that we had fooled this bleeping idiot. Anyway, I remember getting to Seoul. I thought, my God, when I first got to Seoul, it was in ruins. Well, you know, virtually everything. The only thing that was standing that never got was the station, believe it or not. And because the Americans were everywhere. I mean, they were like in hordes, you know. And we went there and gave them a message. Got a message back. Right, back we go again. And then he'd say to me, right, you're on line duty tonight.
Yeah, that's the other thing you want to do. Tell me about line duty. What was line duty?
Well, line duty was that you had to go out, because obviously the shells would shell the line, and out would go the line. You couldn't afford to have not be in touch, so we had to go out and repair the line. And we were repairing these lines, and anyway, one
night... Now, what was that like? I mean, how would you find the break? This is something people don't understand.
Like the old thing, which I was taught, blindfold. So you'd go along feeling it with your hand like that until you found the break, and then you'd get do what you were taught, do it up, took you about a couple of minutes, back, and back. You get back, you go out again, they're out again, boom, 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 out you go again. Anyway, one night I was out, and I was going with we were two of us, because you always
still on the Sammy Chong?
Yeah, no, this was in the front line we were in. So okay. We were together, and all of a sudden this shell came whop, and all my hip, and I looked down, and there was blood pouring like a fountain coming out. Shrapnel hit a vein in my leg. And I said, "Helen, I'm bleeding to death." He said, "You're not bleeding to death." Anyway, he got, because we all had our own bandages in there. See, this was a pocket that we kept band. He undone the band. He put a tourniquet on my leg to stop it. And then he took me back to the medical CP, and they sent me to MASH. You heard of MASH? Which was a film. It was one of the Americans' hospitals. So I go to this hospital, and of course they're all the nurses are officers in America, you know. This Southern Belle, I always called her the Southern Belle. "Hiya, hon." That's how they speak to you. "Hiya, hon. How you feeling?" I said, "Oh, terrible." She said, "Oh, we'll fix you up," like, you know. She's taking me down. She said, "How old are you?" So I said, 18 and a half. And she went, "You're a baby." And she started to cry. And I said, "What's the crying for?" I thought, because Americans don't go in until they're 21. We were going when... She couldn't believe that I was a soldier, you know. Anyway, they sent me back to Japan to play, you know, and I was there for a few weeks. And of course, I thought, "Oh, this is all right." Bang, I was back again.
I think this is a bit later, though, isn't it? How long had you been out there before this happened?
Oh, this was around about, God knows, about, it wasn't cold anymore. It must have around about April, May, something.
Yeah,
like that.
That's when you're at the Koh Ang San.
Yeah.
So we'll come back to that, I think.
Yeah,
so you've
run, yeah, I run in front of him.
It's all right, no problem. Now, so that was, you got onto that from repairing telephone lines.
Yeah.
That's where we got.
I did it all.
Any other signaller's duties? I'm thinking of in Sammy Chong, the first time.
Yeah. Well, radio, wireless, batteries.
Now tell me about the batteries. Where was the lorry kept? And, well, the generator.
The generators were very tiny. They were only about as big as this, actually.
About a foot?
Yeah, a foot and a half. They weren't very big, and they had, like, handles that you could pick them up. They were quite weighty, but you got used to the weight, and they would then, put there on the first battery, you put negative, positive, and all the way through, negative, positive, and you could do all the batteries. In fact, I used to do the Sergeant Major's battery as well for him. Did they ever tell you about Sergeant Major we had? Gilchrist? Did he ever mention?
That's the regimental sergeant.
Oh, God, he was a sergeant.
Now, what was wrong with him?
Wrong with him? What your best question was, what was right with him? He was an ex. He came out of the Coldstream Guards. He was a sergeant. He got fed up because he couldn't get any further in promotion. So he came to our regiment. Of course, they made him a sergeant major. And he was 6'5". And he was a absolute bastard, and I mean of the highest degree. But I got on all right with him.
Now, how did it show itself? In what way was he a bastard?
Oh, he was. His old attitude, his way he treated everybody, I mean, he even treated the officers the same way. I remember when we went to Hong Kong, one of them walked across the square. Well, he went bloody potty. "Mr. Finch, get up my bloody square," and he marched him off the square. But sergeant majors are nuts anyway. They have to be, otherwise it wouldn't be sergeant majors or something.